order. And I would ask if Chief Hall would please lead us in the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Good morning, Director.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the board. Jack Lane, your Executive Director. If you'd like, I'll start with item B, introductions, presentations, and announcements. First, in keeping with a new Arizona revised statute, it's necessary for us to, on audio, to announce who is present and who is absent. So with that, and you'll hear more on item E when Mr. Hargraves comes up and speaks to you about the changes in the law on the public meetings, but I need to announce that we still have one vacancy, a public member vacancy, and the following members are going to be absent today. Mr. Paul Ehler from the Attorney General's Office, Chief Deputy Byron Gwaltney, who is our detention, and then Mr. Andrew Lefevre is absent today. Next announcement, I think you all remember our Assistant Attorney General Jean Galvin. She's here to provide legal advice to the board on final action case 15-160, which is Gonzalo Mata Jr., and also on the four consent agreements, 18-058 Kyle Otis, 18-072 Kyle Arnett, 17-123 Juan Chavez Munoz, and 16-156 Mr. Richard Pena. And that's all I have to cover on introductions and presentations.
Thank you, sir. We want to move on to the Executive Director report.
And this would be the quickest Executive Director's report you've ever had. I have nothing to report under those three items of budget, communications, or legislative updates.
All right.
And that would bring us to the consent agenda, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you very much. Consent agenda calls for a motion, and I take it that you've all had a chance to review it. And if so, I would ask for a motion for approval of all the consent agenda items.
Make a motion to accept the consent agenda.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any discussion on our consent agenda? Having none, all those in favor?
Chairman, can we just articulate who, or repeat and identify on the record, who made the motion and who seconded?
Under the new statute that's required.
I believe it was Sheriff Daniels
for the motion.
Who made the second?
Chuck Ryan.
Thank you.
You bet. Thank you. And did we get through the vote? We had, okay. All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? And the motion carries to approve the consent agenda. And now that takes us into item E to discuss.
And just for the record purposes, it was carried unanimously, correct?
Yes, it is.
And item E.
We should have his presentation first.
Yeah. We probably should have, because that became effective August 3rd, that we needed to follow that. So I will allow Mr. Hargrave to come up for item E and walk through some of the nuances of the board meeting.
Thank you, Director. Mr. Hargraves, we look forward to hearing about the new changes.
Thank you, Chairman Masher, members of the board. Seth Hargraves, Assistant Attorney General. This was kind of brought up to your attention back in July by Director Lane about there being new statutes that are applicable to the board. I did write a memo. It should be in your packet. I won't go through all of it. Certainly read that. I'll just highlight a few things. As you notice, there's now a requirement to do a roll call and identify everyone that's present. The statute also requires there be audio recording of the meeting that also be posted on the website. So for purposes of that recording, in order to identify who's made the motion and who and how each member voted, I'm going to be asking, identified here, when written minutes are done by Sandy can write down and document it, but as far as the audio recording, it's you can't tell, you just hear a voice. So when the motion is made, I would ask that kind of repeat, motion was made by so-and-so, seconded by so-and-so, take your vote, and then state on the record how it passed or who voted against, so we can comply with the statute as to meeting those notification requirements in the recording. Also, as a reminder, the definition of meeting has been somewhat expanded. So if there's an email communication from one member to a quorum of other members, even if there's no response to that, if it's making suggestions or proposing something that is within the board's purview that should be done in a meeting, that could constitute an improper meeting. So kind of when you, if you do email, just be kind of keep that in the back of your mind and be cautious. And also, another change to the statute was enhancing the penalty provisions for violations of the open meeting law. And again, it's all in the memo. I'd be happy to answer any questions you may have. But otherwise, I just ask you to refer back to that.
Any questions at all?
Yes. Yeah, I have a question. Of course, I ask this because I'll say, what's a quorum? And you'll explain the word quorum. What number is a quorum for this body?
For this board, the board's made up of 13, so a quorum is 7.
Okay, thank you.
Any other questions about emails or anything? All right. Well, thank you very much, and I'm sure you'll catch us as we move along getting used to these new...
I realize there may be some... getting used to it, so I'll try not to interrupt too often.
Thank you, sir. Thank you. I appreciate that. All right. Next on the agenda, we will be moving into F, review, discussion, and possible action on recommendations from the Executive Director Selection Committee. And Sheriff Daniels, I would ask that we go into executive session to discuss personnel matters, confidential information, and some legal advice on this issue. So with that, I'd like to make that motion, I believe.
I agree. I'll make a motion, and you make a motion on me, too.
I'll
make a motion that we go into executive session so we can discuss our process.
That's a little second.
Just to be clear, for... discuss a personal matter, review confidential information, obtain legal advice?
Yes. Yes. Thank you, Seth. Yes.
And that was Sheriff Daniels who made the motion.
Rodolfo.
And that was. Okay. And so I would ask that we go into executive session at this point. Thank you.
Give us.
Sorry. Any other discussion on that?
It should have been second. I second. I need
to
use my
second.
Name.
And then all those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? And it's unanimous. We're going into it.
You can have the pleasure for seconding. I didn't hear your second. I wanted my name in the book. So
I know.
I want my name on the book. And I'm not too sure I'm going to email 7 of us at any given time. Any.
Back from executive session, and I will turn this back over to the director of the selection subcommittee, Sheriff Daniels.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members. The subcommittee... regarding the hiring of the executive director, we had reviewed 9, I'll just say it, outstanding applications, individuals. It was tough. We vetted all 9. The subcommittee at this time is going to recommend Matthew Gurondonald. I hope I butchered that, Matt. Matthew, for the position, also within the recommendation, the motion here that he fills as deputy director upon successful background and polygraph and his availability to come over to AD Post and then take the position of executive director upon the departure of Mr. Lane. So that is the motion.
I second it.
I have a motion and a second.
That was Frank Milstead who seconded
it. Okay, give me.
That was Frank Milstead and Sheriff Daniels. Maybe if you guys say your own names, then I won't forget.
We're just messing with you.
Okay.
Sheriff Mark Daniels made the motion.
And is there any further discussion on that motion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? The motion carries unanimous. Thank you very much. Okay. Congratulations,
Congratulations,
sir.
Matt.
Thank you.
Congratulations very much. Did you wish to say anything? Or?
Mr. Chairman, members of the board, thank you very much. I'm very excited for this opportunity, and I'm humbled by the support I got from each one of you. I know some of the other candidates, and I, again, I'm humbled that you chose me. I won't speak long, so I'm assuming moving forward you'll hear me speak quite a bit. But I'm excited for the challenges. I'm a second-generation police officer. I love the profession, and I look forward to the opportunity to affect it on a statewide level and work with each one of you to push the mission of the board. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Congratulations. All right. We will move on to the next item on our agenda, and we are getting into final action cases. Mr. Hargrave, case number 15160.
Thank you, Chairman Mesher, members of the board. Seth Hargraves, Assistant Attorney General. This is a case involving former Kearney Police Officer Gonzalo Mata. The case went to hearing before the Office of Administrative Hearings on May 21st and 22nd of this year, with five allegations. One, that on July 18, 2015, Officer Mata texted, "I'm going to kill you," to his estranged wife. On that same date, he violated a written memorandum of understanding from his agency by contacting his estranged wife with text messages outside the scope of their allowed contact. The next day, July 19th, he violated a written memorandum of understanding by contacting his wife in person outside the scope of their allowed contact. Then on July 28th, he violated a court order of protection by telephoning his wife, estranged wife, from a blocked number. That same date, violated court order of protection by following her to her gym, LA Fitness. And also that same date, violated a court order of protection by driving by her residence. This case, essentially, back in late 2014, early 2015, Officer Mata and his wife separated after over 10 years of marriage. He did not take that separation well. After that, he would repeatedly call and text her, accuse her of seeing somebody else, drive by her house to check on her, drive around South Tucson where she was working. She was a police officer with the South Tucson Police Department. He would drive around while she was on duty, show up at her calls. Got to the point where her agency contacted his, asked them to kind of intervene and kind of do something about it. He was talked to verbally by his supervisor. He didn't take that counseling well. The conduct continued to the point where he was brought in to be issued a memorandum of understanding to kind of put some rein in his conduct. That didn't go well either, walked out of that, leading up to the events of July 18, 2015. Late evening on the 17th, the calls and text started up again, accusing her of being with somebody else. Leaving the house to go meet with them, got to the point, text, she's not answering his calls, texting, he texts out, "I'm going to kill you." She reports that, eventually gets an order of protection, and the conduct kind of continued up till the allegations we presented. At the hearing in this matter, the administrative law judge heard the testimony of the witnesses, the evidence, and issued the recommended decision that's in your packet. The ALJ found that the state had met its burden of establishing the allegations and found that the conduct constituted a violation of post rules. In doing so, the administrative law judge issued 41 findings of fact and 22 conclusions of law. The state would ask the board to adopt and accept those findings with some modifications. Finding of fact 24, it references that respondent had sent his wife 10 texts between 12:29 a.m. and 3:27 a.m. on July 18, 2015, eventually culminating in a text where he declared, "I'm going to kill you." I would ask that paragraph be modified. It was actually, the times were a little bit off. recommend modifying that on line, starting on line 8, that he sent 10 texts between 10:56 p.m. on July 17, 2018 and 12:43 a.m. on July 18, 2015. That's demonstrated in the record, Exhibit 28, pages 243 to 244. Also, paragraph 26, I'd ask you to consider modifying that. It starts out on the afternoon of July 18, 2015. It was actually the morning of July 18, 2015. So I'd ask that paragraph be modified to change afternoon to morning. And again, that's documented in a police report in Exhibit 11. So with those, I'd ask the board to adopt those findings, 1 through 41. With those modifications, adopt the conclusions of law, and based upon the conduct involved, believe that discipline of revocation would be appropriate in this matter. Be happy to answer any questions you may have.
Any questions?
I believe Mr. Mata's attorney and Mr. Mata are here to address you as well.
Thank you. Good morning.
Good morning. My name is Steve Cerbalik. I'm the attorney for Gonzalo Mata Jr. In the time that I have, I'd like to talk about the concept of due process regarding this matter. Then I'd like to discuss my proposed path forward. And finally, I intend on leaving time to answer questions that the board might have related to the findings and what occurred. Before I start, I want to clarify something that was heavily glossed over in the ALJ's report. Mr. Mata actually admitted to violating as-post rules at the very beginning of the proceedings by having inappropriate contact with his wife over the phone. So this concept of we're here to challenge every part of what happened, that hasn't been the case from the beginning. From my time talking to as-post staff all the way up to the hearing, there's parts of this that we absolutely admit and that we admit violate the as-post rules. So, in other words, he actually accepted responsibility for behaving unprofessionally while he was attempting to deal, and dealing very poorly, with the end of his marriage. But the issues with the wife didn't stop there. So in the past few years, they've battled about various issues, mostly child custody, in court. And before I go much further, it's important for the board to remember that Mr. Mata's ex-wife, now, was an as-post certified peace officer at all times relevant to the allegations before post. That's going to become pretty important pretty quickly. So what happened? His wife actually made some serious criminal allegations against Mr. Mata, and her statements caused him to be indicted for felony stalking. And as the board knows, if he'd been convicted of a felony or one of the multiple felonies that he had charged with, this case would be really easy. This would be an automatic revocation. But not only was Mr. Mata not convicted, the charges were completely dropped. And as post witnesses revealed during the hearing, that they actually didn't know why the charges were completely dismissed prior to the hearing, because they didn't know what we knew. Specifically, we knew that Mr. Mata's wife, again, at the time a sworn peace officer, submitted a signed, notarized statement under the penalty of perjury, recanting most of the criminal allegations against Mr. Mata. And I'm going to come back to this later. So now to due process. At Mr. Mata's hearing, we knew that his wife would be a key witness, and she stated that she didn't want to testify in person. We objected to her appearing remotely because since the incidents that had led to Mr. Mata's termination, they've been in court together on multiple occasions without incident. There have been dozens of custody exchanges because they have a child in common, and there was no incident. So why was she unwilling to appear to testify? The ALJ granted her request to appear remotely over our objection. And when she testified remotely, we pointed out that her testimony before the ALJ in the as-post proceeding was in direct conflict with the sworn written testimony that she had previously notarized and submitted. So then, when the ALJ said, wait, you have the right to remain silent. This is a sworn testimony proceeding. You've submitted prior sworn testimony. By definition, lawyers like to argue about witnesses committed perjury. By definition, you're committing perjury. Either you lied then or you're lying now. You have the right to remain silent. So then she says, okay, I remain silent. So these allegations about stalking, my further questions about the allegations about the stalking, I remain silent. I have the right to remain silent. I'm invoking my Fifth Amendment right. At that point, I moved the ALJ to strike the witness and her testimony, because how can someone who's trying to defend their certification actually defend the certification when she's testified for post Now it's time for cross-examination about the elements of some of these most serious charges, and she invokes the right to remain silent. So that's only the first, actually, of the due process concerns, because there's an expression that I'm sure most of you have heard, that close enough only counts in horseshoes and hand grenades, and close enough shouldn't count in ASPO's proceedings. So there's allegations that Mr. Mata defied an order from his agency not to contact his wife that was purportedly issued by the acting chief. Well, close enough, because this memorandum of understanding, this written document that he was supposedly served, evidence shows it hadn't been served. Mr. Mata had actually brought his concerns to the city manager prior to this meeting, and this memo supposedly outlining this order was there. I'm sorry, sir.
A couple more minutes.
I thought I had 15 minutes to present my case per the letter. But okay.
If you could
try to keep it close. There was also the allegation that he violated the order of protection by being physically near his wife. So this disregards the sworn testimony of officers saying that he didn't actually meet the elements of the order. Had I been there, we wouldn't have been able to arrest him for this. He wasn't in physical proximity with his wife. He wasn't at the protected address. And close enough doesn't count in police work at this particular circumstance. So there was the allegation that he committed the elements of a felony. And it's disregarded the fact that the wife had recanted in sworn testimony and the charges were dismissed because, you know, it's close enough. So what do we do now? I ask that you consider other mitigating factors here in addition to the due process concerns, specifically that the allegations against Mr. Mata relate exclusively to these issues for his ex-wife. There's no violence alleged. There are no criminal convictions. And critically, there's no allegations that Mr. Mata mistreated the citizens of Arizona or that he's unable to perform the duties of an ASPOST certified peace officer. We recognize that there would be sanctions. We have from the beginning. But the sanction of revocation, permanently depriving someone of a career, is appropriate in certain circumstances. Felony conduct, dishonesty, and presenting a danger to the citizens that you all swore to serve and protect. But here, the case against Mr. Mata falls far short. While this matter was pending for more than 2 years, he has been law-abiding, and what he asks for is the opportunity to apply to other departments to resume his career. So I propose that the board adopt the findings of fact and conclusions of law, much to my chagrin. And for the record, I don't have objections to Mr. Hargrave's requested factual modifications. And then I request that the board issues a sanction of a 2-year suspension of his peace officer certification. What he did was wrong. What he did deserves punishment. He has been punished. At the same time, to permanently deprive him of the ability to be a police officer, or to not at least let him go through a background process and explain himself to another agency, I think is a penalty too harsh, based off of the facts and the circumstances of this case. If the board has any questions, I'd be happy to answer them.
Questions from the board?
Yeah, Frank Milstead, I have a couple questions. So are you saying that he did not threaten to kill her on a couple of occasions?
On a couple of occasions, no. And what happened with this phone call, text message exchange, and there's hundreds if not thousands of text messages that are there, in a flurry of text messages, he typed, the text message transcript shows, I'm going to kill you. What he explained to the criminal investigators, what he demonstrated to them at the time, is that his phone auto-corrects on a bunch of different issues, and as is in the hearing officer's report, the text messages exchanged between those two are replete with spelling and grammar issues that are here. So my client's position from the beginning is that I didn't intend to actually say I'm going to kill you. I intended to say I'm going to call you. There is a single discrete instance of this occurring in the thousands of text messages. There's no other threats of bodily harm or death or anything else like that.
And did he or did he not violate his order of protection on numerous occasions?
On numerous occasions, no. Now, what we conceded related to, again, the text messages and the blocked phone calls is that he did attempt to contact his wife, but physically violate the order of protection, and this is where, again, that close enough doesn't count. The officers even testified, had I been a police officer that was here, he wasn't physically near her related to things that happened that any officer was able to substantiate, and he wasn't physically near the protected address sufficient to uphold a violation of the order of protection.
Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Yes?
I have one question, just kind of a follow-up to Director Milstead. The content of the text message that was auto-corrected.
Yes.
What was the conversation prior to that exact text?
To characterize it, it's, you know, I think that Mr. Hargraves would probably agree that he's trying to say, hey, I want to talk to you. Let's figure this out. I'm going to go to California. It's a flurry of text messages that are going back and forth over a long period of time.
Right.
And
I guess I'm just asking, do we know, like, the previous text right before that one that would constitute either I'm going to call you or I'm going to kill you text?
I don't have them memorized. It's my recollection that, for the most part, it's him trying to make contact. Why aren't you answering the phone? You know, I want to talk to you about what's going on. Where are you? That would, I think, characterize the vast majority of the text messages.
Nothing further.
Thank you, sir. Any other questions? Yes, sir.
If I'm reading this right, all of this stuff occurred over a 10-day period.
Yeah, they texted a lot before that, but the allegations of misconduct that we have here, this is a short period of time that this is happening. And there have been no criminal allegations since.
Nothing else? Did your client wish to say something? Is he here?
I don't believe so. I think he just wanted to watch the proceedings.
Okay. All right.
You good?
Yeah.
Mr. Hargrave?
This actually wasn't going on just in the matter of 10 days. There was conduct that led up to the initial incident where the wife's department contacted his department. This had been going on for months. And as far as the text messages, it wasn't, I'm going to go to California. There was no mention of California. I know when he was eventually questioned about this, he was saying, well, I was trying to get in touch with her because I wanted to take our daughter to California. None of the text messages mentioned anything about that. But let me go down the list of the text messages for you that led up to this, and I'll keep it to that time period that we talked about in the finding of facts, those 10 text messages. It says, well, is it that hard to tell me? God damn it. Can you answer your phone? Why do you do this to me? Please, your phone, you fucking whore. You fucking left the house. You left to go meet with this guy. I can't believe it. You're with a guy. I'm going to kill you. And that's just the text messages. That doesn't include the litany of phone calls, one after another, that led up to that. As counsel said, he's admitted to those texts. And he said, well, it was an autocorrect. Well, the phone, the C's over here, the K's over here. And if it's auto-correcting call to kill, there was no explanation as to why the five other times after that one, it didn't auto-correct to kill. It was call. They've admitted that text message, admitted to violation of order protection. Counsel said he's okay with the board adopting the findings of fact and the conclusions of law. If you go through those conclusions of law, the ALJ addressed each and every one of them and found that Mr. Mata's explanation just wasn't credible. She found the violations, and in the end, towards the end, basically acknowledges that response attempts to discredit and shame the wife to eschew accountability by relying on tenuous semantics highlight the fact that he has failed to take any responsibility for his actions or acknowledge the culpability he had in the charged allegations. If you look at the record, you put him in the proper context, this is egregious behavior by a certified peace officer. We believe that revocation is the appropriate outcome here. Thank you.
Any other questions or comments?
Mr. Chairman, Frank Milstead, one question for Mr. Hargraves. The sworn affidavit that the ex-wife provided to the court, do you have any commentary on the validity of that comment?
There was a written statement that was addressed. She did testify to that fact at the hearing, and she gave the context of where that was done. There was communication. He was facing criminal charges. And according to the wife, he asked her to help her out, help him out by making that statement, and in exchange, he would give up something else. She testified to that. There were also other things that came along in the course of their relationship where he got her to do things based upon his promises. So, yes, she did sign that statement, and she explained to the judge the reasons why, and I believe the judge kind of addressed that in her decision.
Thank you, Mr. Rodriguez.
I have one quick question, sir. And I know what your recommendation is, but what has the board decided on in the past? Is that consistent with revocation?
I have not gone back and reviewed other cases. I'm looking strictly on the facts and circumstances of this particular case and the conduct involved.
Okay, thank you. Any other questions, comments? Having none, may I have a motion, please?
Sergeant Aparicio, I will make a motion to accept the ALJ's decision with the modifications in finding fact 24 and paragraph 26 on impose a sanction of revocation.
We have a motion. Is there a second from Sheriff Daniels? Any other discussion on the motion? Having no discussion, all those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Then the motion carries unanimously. Thank you. Okay, we're moving on to case 18-058. Mr. Hargrave.
Thank you. Before you have a proposed consent agreement involving Kyle Otis, former officer with the Prescott Police Department. And the proposed consent agreement is for a six-month suspension of certification. In January of 2018, Officer Otis, while he was at the Northern Arizona Regional Training Academy, assisting with CPR instruction, took cell phone pictures and videos of a fully clothed female police recruit who was performing CPR training at the time. He then forwarded two of the pictures of the recruit to another officer's cell phone while the officer was attending SWAT training. Pictures were then viewed by other officers at the training. During the course of his subsequent internal interviews, he initially left out some details regarding his motives, although he acknowledged his conduct. He was truthful when he advised the investigator that he did take the pictures and videos of the specific female because she was attractive. Again, we have signed consent for a six-month suspension. I believe Mr. Otis is here to address the board. I'd be happy to answer any questions on this matter.
Yes, Chairman, sorry I'm the guy with the questions today, but what the taking of the photographs or the videos, what part of that does that violate?
Well, the he was focusing in on like her rear end, kind of it was somewhat conduct unbecoming. It was unprofessional. His employer was not too pleased with the conduct. It was kind of done in a suggestive manner and being shared with others. It was enough for the board to initiate proceedings initially on the violations of 8 and 12.
Thank you. I'd like to recuse myself from this, and Chief Rodbell will take over for me, please.
So I have to say Chief Nasher is recusing himself, and I'm
Sheriff.
Taking the chair.
I'm
Sheriff. Sheriff, sorry, I'm Sheriff. Chief. You got elected. I get that.
Thank you.
I'm through to my first start. So any questions? Any other questions? Hearing none, I'll entertain a motion.
Well, Mr. Otis is here. You would like to address you.
I'm sorry. Okay. Sir.
Chairman of the board, members of the board, I'd like to thank you for the opportunity to come before you and speak. And also, I'm sorry that we're here. my actions on that day were immature, to say the least. And I was there to teach, and instead I acted childishly, and I've always tried my best to represent myself, my hometown, and my department very well. If you ask anybody there, they will tell you that this is very far from, or very left of center for me. This is not the type of behavior that I usually show. I just wanted the chance to come before you and let you guys know that I've always had a servant's heart. I started out as a combat medic in the Army, did a stint as a firefighter, quickly realized I was better in blue. I wanted to protect my community, and I wanted to be there for them in hard time. And I've always came through that door in the department wanting to give 100% every day. And that day I fell short, and I let myself and my department, my family, and my community down by my actions. I'm truly regretful for what I did, and I should not have taken the pictures of it. It wasn't a professional thing to do. I have had a great deal of time to think about this, and that it's definitely put things in perspective. I want nothing more than to be able to serve my community and continue to serve my community and protect them. That's my driving force in life. I know that I'll give 110% every day I walk through that door. I do not know what the next guy will do. I apologize to you guys for having to be here for this. I apologize for falling short that day. However, that is not my normal conduct.
Thank you, Mr. Oz. Anybody have any questions? Okay, thank you, sir. Appreciate it. At this point, I'll entertain a motion.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes, sir.
Frank, let's do it again. I'm trying to equate this to something that would be analogous to the photos. I mean, we've had troopers and deputies and officers take inappropriate crime scene photos, other photos that have come to we've investigated. I don't know. I just can't remember anybody getting their peace officer certification suspended for those actions alone. And so I'm struggling with that as a single event. I can't think that Mr. Otis is the first police officer to ever have done that. And so is there any history on this at all to support a 6-month suspension of the peace officer certification?
Are you asking me, Director?
You or Mr. Hargraves, anybody who would have the institutional knowledge. I'm concerned about doing this.
Yeah, obviously it rose to the level where he was terminated by his agency, and that's when they reported what they considered misconduct to us. And at that point, that's when Mr. Hargraves, I'm not sure if you handled this or Mr. Saltz did. Mr. Saltz entered into the conversation with Mr. Otis concerning the stipulated agreement for a 6-month. I think the intent was, and I only Mr. Otis could tell you this, but there were some concerns over what the intent of the photos were. As far as past conduct like this, I can't recall any particular situation like that where we've had this type of situation. So that's the best answer I give you, Director.
So my question is, I don't remember seeing this case, and I have been absent at times. So I don't remember this case coming before the board, and how long ago that was.
I don't believe the board was given this as a new case and initiated. It's not uncommon for us to, when we receive the misconduct allegations, to open those lines of conversation with the accused former officer. It doesn't always go. Many of these stipulated agreements happen before the board is given an initial case on it.
So if there's a feeling on the board, and there may have been, not making a motion, but a feeling on the board that we would do something different, how do we proceed that with that? Does that go back for negotiation for what's different, or does that motion carry here today? Because we've not seen this case before.
You could offer a consent agreement at this time to enter into another agreement with a different discipline, if that's the feeling of the board.
But are other options off the table, the agency discretion off the table at this time?
No. Okay. Agency discretion is on the table.
Okay.
I think you have a staff member that might have some insight into...
Oh.
Yeah, I'm getting a signal from one of our compliance people that you may have had a past case that's similar.
That, and to kind of expand on what Director Mills said.
Go ahead.
Okay. Real quickly, I got this directly from some of the chain of command at Prescott PD, so I know it from verbal communications that what threw it our way wasn't the pictures. It was when he had the interviews, subsequent interviews with the sergeant, that Officer Otis minimized a little bit of what his intentions were initially, that yeah, I took the photos of everybody because I was an instructor, and then the investigator, the interviewer said, well, was it more than that? Was there more substance to that? Did you actually take the pictures of the female recruits more so because they're female? And he said, yes, I did that. Eventually, in that same interview, he said, yes, I took the pictures of the female recruits because they were good looking, and I was doing something that was immature and poor judgment. That's really what threw it our way. That's what I was told. So that's why we're hearing it today, I believe.
Thank you. Mr. Chairman, I have one more comment.
I'm Mike Dalton, Compliance Unit. Sorry.
Mr. Chairman, again, Framo said, I think cops take pictures of pretty girls every now and then. And I think people take pictures of other people they find attractive every now and then. And if these pictures were taken to disparage the woman, to humiliate her, if there was commentary or text that went along to embarrass or to put her in some sort of negative light, I would be outraged. Because I think it's hard enough to be a female in this occupation already without having male officers make it just that much more difficult to work 25 years in this profession. But to me, this sounds like he took a picture of a pretty girl and he shared it, but not to harass or demean or disparage. So that's kind of where I'm looking at this from my view. And I worry that we are taking some of these things too far. And so that's my thought process and why I asked the question, that I explained that to the board in the room. That's all.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, I have a question. Sheriff, or Mark Daniels. Do we have any intent, what his intent was? Like, to fill in the questions that the director's talking about, do we know? Were there any words or text that went along with the photo that could help fill this in for us?
Mike Dalton again. Not that I was made aware of. I think I received all the information.
Okay. Thank you.
I have a question. This one's for Mr. Otis. Sir, you said you were there as an instructor.
Yes, sir. I was there as a CPR instructor.
Thank you,
Sergeant Priscia.
Sergeant, I appreciate it.
Any further discussion? Entertain a motion?
Sergeant Apriciel, I would move to accept the consent agreement for suspension from February 15, 2018 to August 15, 2018.
Do I have a second? Motion dies in lack of a second. Any other motion?
Frank Milstead, I would make a motion that we send this back for a review of the consent agreement with the recommendation that at this point he's resigned and that there is no suspension of his peace officer certification, and he would like to reapply for some job and look for someone to hire him, that opportunity would be available to him.
So, question, do we have to do that, or do we just...
It's, and you can certainly address Ms. Galvin on this. It sounds like you're looking to reject the proposed consent agreement.
Yes, sir. That would be my motion.
And it doesn't sound like you're looking for discipline in the future.
No, sir, I'm not.
And we get clarification from Ms. Galvin. It sounds to me like your motion would be along the lines of rejecting the proposed consent agreement and instead taking an action to close the file, no action at agency discretion.
Yes, sir, that would be exactly what I was trying to say.
We have a motion explained on the table. Do I have a second?
Second.
Second by?
Sergeant Andrew Collins.
Thank you. We have a motion and a second. Any discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor of the motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed say nay.
Nay, Sergeant, I appreciate it.
Do I need to close that out? We have a motion with one opposed. Okay. Thank you.
You're back.
Thank you very much. And we will be moving on to the next case. Mr. Hargraves, I believe we're on 18-072 at this time.
This is a case involving Huachuca City Police Officer Kyle Arnett. April 23rd, 2018, Officer Arnett underwent a background interview with the Cochise County Sheriff's Office for a lateral deputy sheriff position. During the interview, he disclosed that while on duty with the Huachuca City Police Department, he had masturbated at one time while on duty. During that interview, he also kind of clarified and indicated that it was actually three times where he was not master of his domain. It also came about that in his previous employment working for the city landfill that he had engaged in the same conduct at least 20 times. The Cochise County decided not to continue with him as a lateral candidate. Post was notified. His current agency was notified. They have kept him employed. Before you have a stipulated consent agreement stipulating to findings of fact and conclusions of law and leaving it up to the board to decide what the appropriate discipline would be. And I believe that both Mr. Arnett and his lieutenant are here to address the board. So I'd ask the board to accept the stipulated findings and conclusions and issue whatever discipline the board deems to be appropriate for this case.
Any questions?
I've never seen anything like this before. That we, this may actually consent to do whatever you want to do.
I mean, it has come up. It's rare, but it has come up before.
Okay, thank you.
Who was speaking?
Mr. Chairman, members of the board, my name is Kyle Arnett. I've been an officer with the town of Huachuca City for 2 years now. I would just like to say for the record that I made a mistake. I was upfront and honest about the mistake. I brought it to his attention before I was asked. Prior to my law enforcement career, I was a volunteer firefighter for 10 years with the town of Huachuca City. Serving my community and the public is in my blood. Since my employment, I have been rewarded with the top cop for my agency for Cochise County and the Mad DUI Award. After the conduct was brought to my supervisor's attention, I received a 3-day suspension without pay, and I voluntarily took 4 counseling sessions with a counselor, referenced the issue, which he found that there was no reason that I cannot continue my job. I self-corrected my issue before this ever came up, before the board. I made a mistake, and I'm putting myself at the mercy of you guys to deem what is necessary for punishment. So that is all I have to say. Thank you.
Questions?
Mr. Chair, I recuse myself.
Let the record reflect. Comments, questions? Is there someone else that would like to speak? Good morning. If you'd identify yourself, please.
Mr. Chairman, members of the board, I'm Lieutenant Joseph Glowacki, Huachuca City Police. I am Officer Arnett's immediate supervisor. I've been with the Wachuca City Police Department for 21 years, 19 of that as an officer, prior to that as a dispatcher. Officer Arnett did make a mistake. It was during his field training a year and a half ago. When it was brought to our attention, I investigated it. He was totally honest with me. He admitted what had happened. I researched it. It was during his field training. It was on times that they were back in the office. His field training officer was working on reports. It was in the bathroom at the office. It could not be observed by any members of the public. It did not interfere with any calls. We did reprimand him. He was given a 3-day suspension without pay, which is the maximum we're allowed to do from the department. He voluntarily, at his expense, entered into counseling, which he has committed. He has done. Since that time, Officer Arnett has turned in one of our top police officers. He's gotten the most DUI arrests. He leads the department in stops. He also is the one that I get the most comments from the public about how professional he is, how good he is at dealing with the public. He's a police officer. He's an EMT. He's also a Glock armorer. Officer Arnett has a really good future ahead of him. I also researched back integrity bulletins, and the closest I found was in the fourth quarter of 2015. Officer masturbated on duty in a bathroom, and the board closed it, no action taken. I would ask that the board allow this to be closed out by the actions that were taken by the department.
Questions? Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Do you have anything else to say, Mr.?
Do you have any questions?
No. Entertain a motion.
Just, what is the recommendation from the in the consent agreement? What are they agreeing to?
There's nothing.
Okay.
Got it. I don't recall anything like this.
Yeah.
If I may, Lieutenant did mention a case from the Integrity Bulletin where there was a no action agency discretion. That was a case back in 2015. There was another case this board considered late 2016, early 2017, and the same incident. There was an undisclosed date where officer had masturbated in the break room while on duty. I think in that case the board issued a 1-year suspension. There is another case, 2017, involving receiving oral sex while on duty, and the board did a 10-month suspension in that case. Just kind of similar actions in the past.
Was there any indication of lying or anything at all during any of this?
No.
I thought there was something I'd read where he changed his statement from once to 3 times during
the same year. I believe in the interview, initially he disclosed 1 time in that same interview. He said it was more along the lines of 2 or 3.
Well, again, I'd entertain a motion. You know, I think you got a problem for sure.
Do we know the days of the 3-day suspension? Do we know those dates?
May 30th, 2018 through June 1st, 2018.
Okay. I'll make
it. Okay. We got a motion from Chief Rodville.
So I'll make a motion that we accept the consent agreement decision and order and suspend Mr. Arnett, suspend his police powers from May 30th to June 1st, 2018.
Sergeant Aparicio, second.
We have a motion and a second.
What were the dates again, Alan? I'm sorry.
May 30th to June 1st, 2018. That was Alan Rodbell making the motion.
Any other discussion?
You have a second from the sergeant.
And I did have a second from the sergeant, so is there any other discussion? Having none, all those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed?
Nay.
And one nay from Chief Hall.
And one nay, Chief Quigley.
Okay. And the motion carries. All right, we're moving on to the next case. Mr. Hargrave, 17-123.
This is a case of former Phoenix police officer Juan Jose Chavez Munoz. Before you, you have a proposed consent agreement for a one-year suspension of peace officer certification from July 17, 2017 through July 17, 2018. In the case of Officer Chavez Munoz, on June 2nd, 2017, he was scheduled to be a witness in a PSB, Professional Standards Bureau investigation. He showed up an hour and a half late for that interview. He explained to the supervisor, to the interviewers, he explained he was late due to his supervisor requiring him to attend a briefing, which was not true. As a result of his late arrival, the interview had to be rescheduled for a later date. Upon returning back to duty, his supervisor asked him how his meeting went, and he said that the meeting went well, which was also untrue as the interview had to be rescheduled. There's also, when questioned about why he gave that misleading information, he indicated that when he gets nervous, he just says stuff. Further, in June 2017, he had been instructed to complete critical error reports prior to ending his shift, and he failed to do so. He ended up resigning from the Phoenix Police Department on July 16, 2017. So before you have proposed consent agreement for your consideration. Be happy to answer any questions. I believe Ms. Bailey, I don't know if you want to address the board or not on this. Or...
Thank you.
Good morning.
Good morning. I'm Catherine Bailey with the Law Office of Michael Napier. I actually got this case this morning. My co-counsel was not able to be here this morning. So I am here to answer any questions if you have any, but I do want to make the record clear just so that you understand. This was a young man. His age was 24 years old. He had just come off of FTO. He just started with Sergeant Dabrowski, or Sergeant, I guess it's his sergeant was Sergeant Rue. He had just started, he'd been there just a week, and what happened was he was told to be at PSB at 3 o'clock. He told his sergeant he was supposed to be at PSB at 3 o'clock. At 2:30, this was a double squad day, at 2:30 he went to briefing. His sergeant notified or told PSB during the interview that he saw his young officer there, didn't think anything of it. The briefing went a little longer. The sergeant told PSB that that was true. The briefing had gone a little bit longer. This young man had gone out, this young officer had gone out to get a vehicle, a patrol vehicle, to drive to PSB. He was not able to secure a vehicle because it was double squad day, exactly what Officer Chavez had told PSB. PSB confirmed that through Sergeant Wu. Sergeant Wu said, yes, on double squad days, it can take time to get the vehicle. PSB was able to show that at, according to the MDC, young Officer Chavez signed in at 3:31 to go to PSB, and on the status of his parking location for PSB, it was at 3:51, so it was 3:31 to 3:51. That's how long it took to drive to PSB, which was a normal,
He didn't go anywhere else. He didn't detour. He went straight from PD over to PSB. When you see that it was an hour and a half that it took Officer Chavez to be there, that's actually not accurate. When you look at the documents, unfortunately, it's actually only 45 minutes. Because we know for a fact that young Officer Chavez left at 2:50. We know that he secured a vehicle and was at PSB at 3:45. So we do know that it wasn't quite an hour and a half. It was 45 minutes that he was there. So then let's get down to what he told the Sergeant Dabrowski, who is with PSB. Now, according to Dabrowski, he says that he talked to Officer Chavez on the phone while Officer Chavez is driving to PSB. Sergeant Dabrowski, during his interview, said that he believes that Juan said Officer Chavez had said something, and this is key, because now we have a sergeant from PSB that doesn't really know, it wasn't recorded, he doesn't know what Officer Chavez actually told him, something along the lines of he, Officer Chavez, needed to be in briefing, or that his boss wanted him to be in briefing. That was the comment. Now, Officer Chavez was not interviewed for that statement, why he said that statement, what statement he said during that PSB interview for the original question that that PSB was asking him to come to. So the next issue that PSB was looking at is that when young Chavez, Officer Chavez, came back to the precinct, which was timely. They noticed that he went right from PSB, went straight to briefing, or straight back to the precinct. Sergeant Wu had asked how the meeting was, and he said it went okay. So, well, what does that mean? He didn't say, oh, I sat there, and I had this meeting for 15 minutes. I had this meeting for an hour, and I actually talked. He actually went to PSB. Officer Chavez actually sat down with PSB, and PSB said, well, it's too late. We're going to have to reschedule. That could be a meeting. I don't know. So Officer Chavez has entered into, this was, again, done through Cassidy Bacon, but apparently Officer Chavez, because he was probation, he said there was no reason, he could not keep his job because he was probation with the city of Phoenix, because he's a probationary officer. So he stepped away. And 2 years later, now we're looking at this. This officer is now 2 years older. At the time, he was 24, approximately 24. And so a 24-year-old young man can make mistakes. He can say things. So he leaves, understanding that he has to be forthcoming. He understands now that he has to be careful what he says and how people perceive what he says. 2 years now into maturity, he has an opportunity to work for another police department. He's learned from this. And what they are asking for is a year suspension through AZ Post, because this young officer understands that, yes, I do have to be careful what I do and what I say. So we would ask that this board would go ahead and consider this consent agreement and approve the 1 year on regard to this young officer who now is 2 years older. And I would hope that this board would start looking at these young people that are coming out of the academy and coming into the police department. We have different young people than 20 years ago or when I went to school, when I was going into high school and college. There needs to be training. These are people who maybe have never had confrontation. Maybe these are people who, remember, they're from video games. They're from text messaging, they're from, you know, all this other culture that we were not a part of. And I would ask that this board look at this in the eyes of what we have now, that sometimes people have to mature. And just because they get it wrong or they maybe say something the first time at a job at 24, 2 years later, they can learn from it. And they can be a productive citizen. They can be a productive and very a fabulous police officer for the rest of their 25 years. And so we would ask that you would give this officer an opportunity to go and prove himself and prove himself to this board that he is going to be a stellar police officer for this state. So we would ask that you would accept this consent agreement. Thank you. And I'm here for any questions if I can.
Questions? Having none, may I? Oh, I'm sorry. Mr. Herbert.
This is a consent agreement that was negotiated between my predecessor and another attorney at Ms. Bailey's firm. However, listening to what she just had to say here, her statements contradict the stipulated findings, what the parties had agreed to. This is something that apparently their client and co-counsel in her office had agreed to, and she's telling you these facts aren't correct. Essentially, paragraph two, that it wasn't an hour and a half, it was something less than that, and where the consent said he explained he was being late because his supervisor required him to attend the briefing, she's saying that's not true. If that's the case, I cannot in good conscience recommend this document to you if it contains inaccuracies. So I suggest the board reject the offer and allow the matter to proceed at normal course through the hearing process. Thank you.
I have a question, sir. Do we need to reject it, or can you take it back, or do you need a rejection from us?
Well, it's before you, so you would have okay. I suggest rejecting. Something different could come back to you as part of the process, but based upon what I'm hearing, they're saying this is not accurate.
Mr. Chair, can we reject it with a recommendation, too?
Certainly.
Because, there we go.
I'm prepared to make a motion.
I am, too.
Okay.
I want to say something, too.
Go ahead, sir.
All right. Go ahead. And
I want to make a statement on that. You know, we're an integrity board for a reason, and that's the backbone of who we are in this profession. Ma'am, I respect what you're saying, but I won't agree with them. And the fact that whether they're 21 or 51 or 61, we hire people with core values and integrity. The opportunity, sometimes we only get one, but we got to embrace it. This gentleman who I agree with, Mr. Hargrave, and I think that's where you're going, Leo, is the fact that he signed this fact that he was not truthful. The finding of the fact was I was not true based on his decision, his ability, and his thoughts to not, especially to a supervisor, is one. With that said, I'd like to make a motion to reject the agreement, the consent agreement, and make a motion for a revocation.
Okay.
Can I do that?
I believe the motion would be to refer it to hearing.
Okay. Let me restate that. Reject the consent agreement and refer it back to hearing.
I have a motion from Sheriff Daniels.
I would second that motion.
And I have a second from Sergeant.
I think perhaps the clarification would be to refer this through the proceedings, to initiate proceedings, so he has a chance to respond and send it through your normal process instead of referring it to formal.
This didn't come through us initially.
This is final action.
It's the final action. That's why I was thinking of them.
Okay, so then the motion would stand to refer it to hearing, to formal hearing.
Okay.
Maybe I'm confused. No. It did come to us and we initiated proceedings and he waived his right for hearing?
No, he requested a hearing and in the interim entered into this consent as a possible resolution.
So our first motion was to go back to hearing. That's acceptable? Or we need a new motion?
The first motion to refer to hearing is appropriate.
Okay, I have a motion and a second on refer back to hearing, and there is further discussion.
Yeah, I just had a quick question. Typically in the past, I mean, I understand the integrity issue that came up. But we differentiated between post-Garrity and pre-Garrity untruthfulness claims, correct? I'm sorry, Seth, if I'm putting you on the spot here.
Yeah, there's, as far as pre-Garrity, post-Garrity, and pre-Garrity, the board has gone from no action agency discretion up to revocation.
Okay, for post-Garrity or pre-Garrity? I mean,
pre-Garrity.
Pre-Garrity, okay. All right. That's the only issue I have with this.
Any other discussion? Having none, then I would ask for a vote. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Who was that?
Sergeant Aparicio.
Mark Downs.
Chuck Ryan.
And those opposed?
Nay.
And those are?
Frank Milstead.
Larry Hall.
Andrea Cola.
Rich Wooten.
And the motion does not pass. So I would ask for another motion.
So let me make, Mr. Chairman, may I make a statement with the motion?
Yes.
So Frank Milstead again. So Ms. Bailey gets this case this morning and makes the statements that we all heard. Somewhere down the road, though, her co-counsel comes up with an agreement with this guy, with Mr. Chavez Munoz, for a one-year suspension. And it's agreed upon with the compliance officers. And so I would just make a motion that we accept the consent agreement and suspend the peace officer certification to run from July 17, 2017 through July 17, 2018.
I have a motion from Director Milstead. Is there a second?
I second. Andrea Cole.
I have a motion and a second and further discussion. Having no further discussion, all those in favor?
Aye.
And would you please raise your hand, identify yourselves?
Larry Hall.
Frank Milstead.
Andrea Cola.
Rich Wooten.
And those opposed?
Sergeant Aparicio.
Name? Mark Daniels.
Chuck Ryan.
And you're recused. And the motion passes. Okay, we will move on to the next on the list, and that is 16-156, Mr. Hargrave.
Yes, this is a case involving former Phoenix officer Richard Pena. Mr. Pena was appointed a peace officer at Phoenix in January of 2016 and worked with Phoenix from that date until September 22nd, 2017. On September 13th, 2016, he was a backup officer with two others. Our officers located marijuana inside an individual's vehicle. During the course of that interaction, the driver was given the choice to eat the marijuana or go to jail. Driver ended up choosing to eat the marijuana. The board initiated proceedings on all three officers. I believe this is the last one to come before you. Before you have a consent agreement for a suspension of 3 years to lapse, beginning September 23rd, 2016, and ending September 23rd, 2019. I just want to point out in the consent agreement before you, there is a typo on page one of the agreement on line 19. It's the date states September 22nd, 2017. I'd ask the board to consider accepting this consent agreement with a modification to that date, changing it from 17 to 2016. I've discussed this with Bailey. I believe she's in agreement with that change, but I'll let her address any issues that she may have. I'm happy to answer any questions.
Questions for Mr. Hargraves?
I do have a question.
Yes, sir.
So we've settled a couple of these already, you say?
Yes.
Do you remember the history on those?
I don't. My predecessor was involved with those. I believe there may have been revocation or another 3 year suspension. I'm not positive or voluntarily relinquishing it. you recall, Steve? At least one VO?
Yes, Steve Jacobs, the compliance specialist. One of them, I can't speak to which, voluntarily relinquished his certification. The second, I don't think there was a response, and his certification was revoked. I would have to go check my records to verify those statements as being accurate, though. Those have been a long time ago. This case has been in negotiation for a settlement for quite a while. Mr. Pena was a lesser player in this matter than the other two. And so Mr. Saltz had worked with counsel for almost a year on this matter before it has come back to you.
I'd like to listen to or hear what lesser player means. That's okay.
Well, he was a backup officer on the staff. He wasn't the main officer.
Okay. So he didn't make any suggestions about eating marijuana?
That I don't know.
According to the person that was forced to eat it, he looked at Mr. Pena and said, "Do I have to do this?" And Pena goes, "Yeah, I guess so." That was his involvement.
Okay. It would be important to me for consistency's sake to know what the other cases, how they resolve. So, to the best of your knowledge, that's the resolution of the two?
I would hate to.
Yeah, okay.
I would rather go check, and I can do that now if you want.
Is that acceptable to do that?
You table this matter and come back to it?
Yeah.
I'd like to be consistent.
All right, we will table this for now, and we will move on to the next case. Mr. Perkovich, good morning, sir. Be 18004.
Yes, good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the board. Mark Perkovich, your compliance manager. This first case on May 16, 2018, the board voted to initiate proceedings against a peace officer certification belonging to Mr. James Fedema. Mr. Fedema was formerly with the Tucson Police Department. The formal complaint, which was issued by the board, was mailed by both regular and certified mail. The certified mail receipt was signed for on May the 23rd. 2018, ensuring proper service. And to date, Mr. Fedema has not made any contact with Post, nor has he requested a hearing. In summary, back on December 26, 2017, Officer James Fedema reported to work intoxicated on his very first day as a police officer. By his own admission, he drove himself to work in the state while in police uniform. PBT results showed a BAC of 0.10, and replicate testing revealed a BAC of 0.096 and 0.098. Later on that same day, December 26th, prior to going to a hospital for a blood draw and the continuation of a criminal investigation, Mr. Fedema resigned. It was noted that there was no prosecution related to this case, and research by AZ Post staff has determined in past similar fact-based circumstances, the board action has resulted in revocation. And I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Questions?
Mr. Chairman, I need to recuse myself.
Mr. Lehrer, let the record reflect. And your call. Having no questions, comments, may I have a motion, please?
Frank Milstead, I move that we accept the findings of fact and conclusion of law and impose a sanction of revocation.
Second. Larry Hall, second.
I have a motion and a second. Further discussion? Having none, all those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? And the motion carries unanimously. Mr. Perkovich, we're moving on to 18048.
Yes, Mr. Chair, members of the board, for this particular case, it was back on April the 18th, 2018, that the board voted to initiate proceedings. This was against the peace officer certification of Manuel Espinoza. This was actually a denial proceeding. He was with the Pima County Sheriff's Department at the time as a recruit. The notice of denial was issued by the board, was both mailed by regular and certified mail. The certified mail was receipted for on May the 8th, 2018, ensuring proper service. And to date, Mr. Espinoza has not made any contact with Post, nor has he requested a formal hearing. In summary, it was back on February 13, 2018, that AZ Post staff traveled to the Pima County Sheriff's Department to review the hiring files of newly hired recruits. While reviewing recruit Espinoza's file, it was discovered that he had reported several different amounts of marijuana used during two prior application testing processes with Tucson Police Department. It was noted in 2013 that Mr. Espinoza had listed no drug usage on his preliminary application. However, he went on to fail the written exam and was dismissed from the process. Then in 2014, he again tested with Tucson PD. On the preliminary application, this time he listed three uses of marijuana dating back to occurrence in 2010. Once he got into his polygraph and background state of this process, he then changed that reporting usage up to 20 uses of marijuana. When asked about the differences, Recruit Espinoza admitted to originally trying to quote-unquote minimize his marijuana use in order to get hired. He was later disqualified for dishonesty. This was for Tucson PD again in 2013. Current day in 2017, he then applied to Pima County Sheriff's Department, and he did report the 20 actual uses of marijuana. However, his history of dishonesty in pursuit of his peace officer certification became an issue during his new hire audit. On February 14, 2018, Mr. Espinoza was removed from the academy, at which time his training ended and his employment also ended with Pima County Sheriff's Department. They notified Arizona Post of his termination, as well as the ensuing misconduct. Research by AZ Post staff has determined in past similar fact-based circumstances, which involve dishonesty, the board's action has been denial of peace officer certification. And I'd be happy to answer any questions.
There are no questions. May I have a motion, please?
Frank Milstead, I move that we accept the findings of fact and conclusion of law and impose a sanction of denial of peace officer certification.
Alan Rocco, second.
I have a motion and a second. Any other discussion? Having none, all those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? And the motion carries unanimously. Thank you, and we'll be moving on, Mr. Perkovich, to 18-018.
Yes, Mr. Chair, members of the board, again, back on May 16th, 2018, the board voted to initiate proceedings, this time against the peace officer certification of Mr. Kevin Duschel, formerly with the Surprise Police Department. And once again, the formal notice of complaint was mailed by regular and certified mail to Mr. Duschel's last known address. The notice of complaint sent by certified mail was returned to AZ Post as quote-unquote unclaimed. The notice of complaint sent by regular mail, however, was not returned. To date, Mr. Duschel has not requested a hearing regarding this matter. In summary, it was back on June 23rd, 2017, that several officers from the Surprise Police Department had a squad party. This was to include Officer Duschel and another officer we'll identify as Officer AD. The party started at a restaurant where Officer Duschel was noted to have consumed several alcoholic beverages. The party then moved to the house of a fellow Surprise Police officer, where again Officer Duschel was noted to have consumed additional alcoholic beverages. When Officer AD decided to leave the party, after leaving, he realized that he had left his loaded weapon, which was in a holster, on top of the refrigerator in the kitchen. Officer AD then went back into the residence to retrieve it. That's when Officer Duschel quickly retrieved the weapon, removed it from the holster, and unloaded it. Then when Officer AD came into the kitchen area, Officer Duschel pointed the weapon at Officer AD's midsection, pulled the trigger, and stated, "Gotcha." Officer AD declined to prosecute, and there was no indication of dishonesty on Officer Duschel's behalf. He claimed it was simply a practical joke. On January 11, 2018, Officer Duschel was terminated from the Surprise Police Department. Research by AZ staff has determined in past similar fact-based circumstances, the board action has resulted in revocation. However, the case also involved dishonesty on behalf of the officer involved. And I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Yes, sir.
The case you researched, the prior case, involved dishonesty.
There was a dishonesty component, yes, sir.
Thank you.
Any other questions? Having none, may I have a motion?
Frank Milstead, I move that we accept the findings of fact, conclusion of law, and impose a sanction of revocation.
I second, Larry Hall.
A motion and a second. Further discussion on the motion? Having none, all those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? And the motion carries unanimously. We're moving on, Mr. Perkovich, to 17-159.
Yes, Mr. Chair, members of the board, the last of your final cases for today. Back on May 16, 2018, the board voted to initiate proceedings against peace officer certification belonging to Orion Backe, who was formerly with the Peoria Police Department. And again, the certified complaint was returned to AZ Post, however, the complaint sent via U.S. mail was not. And to date, Mr. Backe has not requested a hearing. In summary, back on November 25th, this dates back to 2016, a supervisor with the Peoria Police Department noted that Officer Ryan Backe had not secured from his graveyard shift, and he was still showing available from their mobile data computer. When the supervisor could not reach Officer Backe, he sent another supervisor to Officer Backe's location, which was at a CVS pharmacy, just to do a welfare check. Officer Backe's patrol vehicle was located in the parking lot. It was unoccupied, however, the vehicle was running. The supervisor later located Officer Backe in the restroom, and based upon his observations, believed Officer Backey was under the influence of something that he described or believed to be a stimulant. It was also noted that several other officers had noticed similar behavior exhibited by Officer Backey in the days prior to, as well as after this incident. As such, Officer Backey was required to submit to a drug screen that was conducted in December. The results of the drug screen revealed Officer Backey tested positive for both amphetamine and oxycodone. When questioned about the positive drug screen, Officer Backey submitted two valid doctor's prescriptions for those medications. However, the investigation revealed that Officer Backey had failed to disclose these two prescription medications being taken, this during three separate fitness for duty evaluations between March the 22nd of 2016 and December 5th of 2016. On July the 26th, 2017, Officer Backey was terminated from the Peoria Police Department. Research by AZ Post staff has determined cases which involve the presence of drugs in an officer's system, this while on duty, have resulted in denial and or revocation of certification by the board. However, in this circumstance, Officer Backey was noted to have provided prescriptions for the drugs which were detected. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
I have one question.
Yes, sir.
Frank Milstead, Mr. Perkovich, was he taking the medications in accordance with the prescription itself? Do we know that?
That we do not know, sir.
Okay, thank you.
Any other questions? Having none, may I have a motion, please?
Let me try this. I'll make a motion and we accept the findings of facts and conclusions of law and impose a sanction of suspension to lapse. I don't know what that date would be.
I can get that for you, sir.
I believe that date would be to lapse would be to July 26th of 2020.
Okay. I'll nod though, that's the motion.
Frank Milstead, second.
I have a motion and a second. Further discussion? Having none, all those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The motion carries unanimously. Thank you, Mr. Perkovich. And
thank you.
Mr. Hargraves, we're going to be going back to case number 16156, which had been tabled.
Speaking with Mr. Jacobs, apparently the previous two were voluntary relinquishments.
Any further questions on
the case number?
That case number is 16156.
No,
it's number 5.
Thank you, sir. So I'll make a motion.
Yes, sir.
So I would make a motion that we reject the consent agreement for 3 years suspension and send it back for renegotiation or hearing or whatever. What does it go back to? Or just just reject it?
Well, if you're looking at renegotiation, what is it that the board would be looking for in this case?
Consistent with the other two, which would be I would be looking for relinquishment, voluntary.
A VR or go to hearing to revoke?
Yes.
Okay.
Second.
All right. I didn't. Give me that motion again.
Okay. So if I understand myself, I make a motion to reject the consent agreement for 3 year suspension of police officer certification and request to go back for renegotiation for voluntary relinquishment or hearing.
I second it.
I have a motion.
Frank Milstead.
From Chief Rod Bell and a second from Director Milstead. Is there further discussion on the motion? Having none, all those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? And the motion carries unanimously. We're going to be moving into new cases. Mr. Caldwell, 18078. Good morning.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the board. Billy Caldwell, one of your compliance specialists. This is the first of three cases I have for you today, and it does involve Officer Kendall Drake, formerly with the City of Mammoth Police Department. Officer Kendall Drake's personal vehicle was stopped by the Superior Police Department on December 8, 2017 at 0141 hours. She was the driver and sole occupant and was reportedly operating the vehicle without headlights. Superior officers noticed a strong odor of marijuana and recovered a little over 9 grams of marijuana after searching her truck. They also found Officer Drake's duty weapon inside. Officer Drake explained to officers and later to Post staff that her roommate has a medical marijuana card, keeps marijuana in their home, and sometimes borrows Officer Drake's truck. Basically, Officer Drake was kind of putting the onus of this and the possession of the marijuana on her roommate with a medical marijuana card. Officer Drake did deny smoking or knowingly possessing marijuana. She came back negative for all drugs after taking a test ordered by the Mammoth Police Department Chief on December 19, 2017. Superior officers submitted documents to the Sinal County Attorney requesting charges of possession of marijuana and weapons misconduct. Officer Drake later entered an informal diversion program and charges will be dropped if she completes it. I'd be glad to answer any questions that y'all might have about this case.
Having no questions, may I have a motion for this new case?
Sergeant Aparicio, make a motion to initiate proceedings.
Chuck Ryan, second.
A motion and a second. Any discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? And the motion carries. Mr. Caldwell, 17187, please.
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to recuse myself.
The record will reflect. Sir?
The second of the cases involves former Buckeye Police Department Assistant Chief Mark Mann. The Buckeye Police Department initiated an internal investigation after an employee reported receiving a threatening email from Assistant Chief Mann. The scope of the investigation broadened and eventually determined the following. The email Chief Mann sent to the employee contained threatening or abusive language, and his overall treatment of the employee was discourteous. Assistant Chief Mann failed to adequately supervise the sergeant who was under his command. Assistant Chief Mann made disparaging, false, or misleading comments about the Buckeye Police Chief and Assistant Chief to other Buckeye Police employees. Assistant Chief Mann's insistence on communicating with some members of the department, including the chief, only through emails contributed to a dysfunctional environment within the agency. Assistant Chief Mann provided the City of Buckeye Human Resources Director and town manager with contradictory or misleading information regarding some facts, as well as the timeline of events in the case. And also that Assistant Chief Mann mishandled an allegation of misconduct against a Buckeye police sergeant that had been made by a federal law enforcement agency. Assistant Chief Mann denied any wrongdoing in the internal investigation and later to post staff. I'd be glad to answer any questions that y'all might have about this case.
Any questions? Having none, a motion, please.
Frank Milstead, I make a motion that we initiate proceedings.
Chuck Ryan, second.
Motion, second. Any discussion?
If you're going to do that, could you identify the rule violations?
Now, wait a minute. Say that again.
The recommendation was not for discipline, so if you're going to initiate proceedings, you need to identify which rules you feel are implicated.
Okay. Can I help, or is that the person who makes the motion?
Go ahead.
I think my concern is paragraph 5 involving misleading information, so I think the rule violations are 13-4-109-2. So paragraph 5 on the document, or line 5, no, number 5, paragraph 9.
Are you talking
criminal
code or
misleading information?
I think Mr. Hargraves is checking the rule.
Okay.
Because normally you also do like the 8 and 12. If you're including those.
I'd be more than happy to add those two. Can we do that? So I would say it's R13-4-109, paragraph 2, 8, and 12.
That would be amended to the motion.
Yeah, is the maker of the motion agreeable to that as well as the second?
Yes, thank you.
Director Milstead agrees to the amendment of the motion.
Chuck Ryan, second.
And Director Ryan, second. Any other discussion on the motion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? And the motion carries unanimously. Thank you, Mr. Caldwell. We'll move on to 18-011.
Last case for you today. This involves Officer Christy Talcali. I hope I'm pronouncing it the right way. Formerly with the San Carlos Tribal Police Department. Officer Talcali worked for San Carlos Tribal Police from April 7, 2015 until August 15, 2016. When the agency sent her termination report to post in 2016, they made no allegation of misconduct on her part. However, she reapplied for a position as an officer with the agency and on April 13, 2017, took a pre-hire polygraph test. During the pre-test interview, she told the examiner she had not engaged in any serious misconduct or sex acts while at work. After showing significant reactions to some of the polygraph test questions, she told the examiner that when she previously was employed at San Carlos, she regularly met with a fellow officer while on duty and engaged in kissing and making out. She also said that on one occasion while on duty, they had sexual contact with each other. The polygraph was readministered, and again, Officer Talcali showed significant reactions to some of the questions. During a post-test interview, again, Officer Talcali admitted that in October 2015, she had sexual intercourse with a fellow San Carlos officer while they were on duty. A review of the Arizona Post personal history form she completed while in her most recent hiring process with San Carlos showed that Officer Talcali made no mention of engaging in any sex acts while on duty previously with the agency. I'd be glad to answer any questions that y'all might have about this case.
No questions. May I have a motion, please?
Chuck Ryan, I recommend we initiate proceedings.
Larry Hall, second.
I have a motion and a second. Is there any other discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? And the motion carries unanimously.
Thank you, sir.
Mr. Caldwell. Good morning.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the board. Arlene Heckel, one of your compliance specialists. This case involves Officer Host, who was working at the Goodyear Police Department for the last 10 years. He began employment there in 2008. In June of 2017, Officer Host started and completed a training program to become a sergeant with that police department. He took the role for the next few months as an acting sergeant whenever there was a need for a fill-in supervisor. On October 1st of 2017, he was assigned actually to his own squad of officers. He was still in the role of that acting sergeant. In the next couple months, there were three incidents that happened that affected his employment with the Goodyear Police Department. On October 21st, Acting Sergeant Host responded to an unknown trouble call which involved a male subject chasing a female subject. At that time, he was first on scene. He found a female subject that he identified as Ms. J.D., and he assumed she was involved, and while he was trying to discover her involvement, she just wanted to go home. She wasn't very cooperative. So he instructed her to sit down. When she wouldn't voluntarily sit down, he used force and put her on the ground and caused minor injuries without really knowing if she was involved yet. Once other officers got there, they went ahead and found out she was the female involved in the incident. They took her back to her apartment, and then he allowed the officers there to go ahead and take her into her apartment without her consent and really without any legal justification at that point. They really didn't have any criminal activity yet. Once inside, they went ahead and did a protective sweep of her apartment and found marijuana in plain view on her bed. Sergeant Host then instructed one of the other officers to go ahead and search around, including a closed container, which was her purse, for additional contraband. She was ultimately arrested for those charges. The next incident that occurred was on October 31st. Acting Sergeant Host again was first on a call of a fight with multiple parties involved. As soon as he drove up, he was immediately met with one of the subjects, and the subject was very confrontational, started yelling at them that they didn't need the police, and he was going to kick Sergeant Host's ass, and he pushed Sergeant Host, actually, back toward his patrol car. Sergeant Host pushed him away, and got him away, pulled out his taser, and then three other subjects came up, approached, and Sergeant Host felt very threatened by these people. He stood by while once another officer got there and tried to take the one subject into custody. That officer was severely injured with a severe head injury. So at that point, Sergeant Host, I think, got a little overwhelmed, went ahead and took the one subject into custody, and then when other officers got there, he instructed them to take the three other subjects involved into custody without really identifying any criminal offenses that those three had committed. So the one person went to jail, the other three went down to the station. Once the detectives looked into it, they felt that there were no charges, so they went ahead and released those. There were two investigations on those two incidents. They felt that Acting Sergeant Host went above and beyond his realm. He didn't have criminal, he couldn't really identify the criminal actions of those three people that he took into custody, and they felt like he had used excessive force on the initial incident. At that point, Acting Sergeant Host felt like he was not where he should be to take a sergeant role, so he took a voluntary demotion back to officer. The chain of command also felt that maybe he needed to have a little bit more training just to be an officer with that department and put him back into the field training program. At that point, he was assigned to a field training officer and worked with him for several months. On January 17th, Officer Host at that point responded with his FTO to a civil standby. A person wanted to get his belongings out of a home. The homeowner said, no, you have to come back another day. Sergeant Host, or Officer Host, really wanted to help this subject. So even after he talked to his field training officer that said, no, we're done here, he called the patrol sergeant. The patrol sergeant again said, no, if the homeowner isn't agreeing to this, you need to leave. However, Officer Host went ahead and let the male subject plus three of his friends go into the home and remove items from the home without the homeowner's consent. Another internal investigation was started after that event, and with all three incidents combined, the Goodyear Police Department terminated his employment. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Chairman Mashra, I don't believe it was noted at the beginning, so just to be clear,
yeah, the number
involved case number 18-050.
Thank you.
Oh, I'm sorry.
That's okay. Any questions?
I got one.
Yes.
So, wow, there's a lot of moving parts here. So what I'm gathering from this, a lot of this is performance.
Yes.
There are internal affairs investigations that exist involving excessive force.
Yes.
And so there's an internal affairs report that exists that has concluded an excessive force investigation, which you'll be able to look at to bring back to us.
Yes.
And you cut through everything else that's performance-based. Make sense on
that? Yes. Okay. Yes. On the first case with the female, the allegations for policy violation, failure to take appropriate action, and conduct unbecoming were sustained on Sergeant Host on that case itself. Okay. The second case, the allegations of exceeding authority, unsatisfactory performance, failure to supervise, failure to take appropriate action, and violating department policies were all sustained against Sergeant Host in that case.
Okay.
And then on the third one, with the civil standby case, allegations of exceeding authority, conduct unbecoming, and insubordination were sustained against Officer Host in that investigation.
I didn't hear use of force, though. I mean, I just missed it.
They did not. They went ahead and did exceeding on that first case.
Okay.
He failed to take appropriate action, what they took it down to, since it was only minor injuries.
Okay, so typically, I mean, historically, the board really hasn't been interested in performance-based dismissals. And we've been interested in things that would rise to a level of looking at certification. And so I don't know that I've heard anything that says that, but I'm just one set of ears, so I'll leave it for discussion.
Mr. Chairman, I agree. I don't think that this rises to a, I mean, obviously he's in the wrong occupation. There's some definite, how he made it 10 years, I don't know. But I don't know that it's for the board to take any other action.
Okay. Any other comments, discussion before we get a motion?
I'll make the motion that we take no action agency discretion.
I'll second that.
Rodbell, sorry.
That was motion by Chief Rodbell, seconded by Director Milstead. And is there any discussion on that motion? Having none, all in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Moving on to case 18-075. Morning, Mr. Rose. How are you, sir?
Good, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, members of the board, I'm Michael Rose, one of the compliance specialists here at Post. On the first case, involves a Clavel Ray. Ray had applied with the Arizona Department of Transportation ECD division as a waiver applicant. During my new hire audit, I discovered several areas on the new hire documentation where Ray was less than truthful relating to his disciplinary action that he had received at his prior agency and also his prior work history. The discrepancies occurred on the Arizona Post Statement of Personal History, on the Arizona State Personnel System Application for Employment, during the Department of Transportation's background investigators interviews, and also during the polygraph interview. After that, I discovered those. Ray's employment with the Department of Transportation was terminated. I'll be happy to answer any questions.
No questions. May I have a motion?
Mr. Chair, I'll make a motion that we initiate proceedings. Alan Rodbell.
Chuck Ryan, second.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries unanimously. Mr. Rose, I think we're moving on to the last case of the day, 18-074.
That case involves a officer, Joey Castellanos. On April 18, 2018, Arizona Post received a termination report from the Gila River Police Department on Officer Joey Castellanos for misconduct. Castellanos was terminated for two different issues. The first was on May 3, 2017, an order of protection was issued against him as a result of a verbal and physical dispute that occurred between him and the mother of his child. They were not married. Referred to the mother of the child as ET. The order of protection included the provisions, Castellanos shall not have any contact with ET, and Castellanos shall only contact ET by email as it relates to their child. The actual exchange of the child for visitation in the past had occurred between Castellanos' parents and ET. On November 23rd, 2017, ET contacts Castellanos by email to arrange a pickup of the child that he had for visitation. Castellanos advises ET that he would let his parents know the time and the location for the exchange. So he leads ET to believe that the exchange is going to occur between his parents and her as it's occurred in the past. When ET shows up to pick up the child, the parents aren't there, but Castellano is there with the child, and they make the exchange of the child. There's nothing said between the two of them. Strictly, they park a little bit of distance apart from each other. The child leaves one car and goes to the other. ET, after that, advises Phoenix PD that Castellanos had violated the order of protection. Phoenix PD did submit charges to the Maricopa County Attorney's Office referenced a violation of the order of protection. The Maricopa County Attorney's Office decided not to pursue charges against Castellanos. So that was the first issue. The second issue was on January 1st, 2018, Castellanos, while off duty, was trying to locate his girlfriend's lost or stolen cell phone. As a result of that, he became involved in a verbal altercation with a resident at a residence in Tempe. Based on a tracking application from the phone and information Castellanos received from the cell provider, he went to a residence in Tempe. At approximately 9:40 p.m. on that date, Castellanos knocks on the door of that residence and accuses the occupant of that residence of having his girlfriend's stolen cell phone. The occupant tells Castellanos he didn't know what he's talking about, get off his property, and he's going to call the police. At that point, Castellanos tells the occupant that he is a cop. Quote, he tells him he's a cop. Should be noted that Castellanos is dressed in shorts and a t-shirt at that time. Tempe PD arrives at the scene, at the residence, talks to the occupant of the residence, talks to Castellanos, and basically has everybody go their own way. No charges are filed, but Tempe PD does advise Gila River PD of the incident. As a result of that, those two things, Castellanos was terminated from the Gila River PD. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Yes, sir.
I have a question, and you may not be able to answer this, but the way I read this document, that the order of protection back in May of 2017
yes.
said he couldn't carry a firearm or own a firearm or purchase a firearm.
Correct.
So at some point in time, he's a law enforcement officer?
They were keeping him on employment without doing any law enforcement. He was doing strictly administrative work.
And at that time, it ended, so it was never an issue?
No.
Okay. Thanks.
Criminal charges still pending, sir?
No. No, they were turned down by the county attorney's office.
Okay. Thank you.
Any other questions?
Okay. Just one more question, just Frank Mills. The first one with the order protection, he unwittingly violates the order because he was going there with another option in mind and she was there. Is that right?
Yeah, and Mr. Chairman, members of the board, basically, in the past, it was always between his parents and the mother of the child. He was never involved in the exchange of child. So in this case, he led her to believe it was going to be that same way, but he shows up. She claimed he violated the order of protection because he was not to be around her.
Got it. Any other questions? If none, may I have a motion, please?
Is the thought amongst us that this goes back or to them, or there's something that we need to do? Because I don't know that there's something we need to do on this. That's my thought.
Well, I think that's an option of a motion there.
So what can you tell us? What did your investigation reveal? He went to retrieve a phone, he confronted somebody, then he sat in the car waiting for the police to arrive.
Right.
He really didn't cause a commotion. He just knocked on the door and confronted them, right?
Right.
So that's not going to tell us anything.
Correct.
And then the violation of the court order has already been adjudicated as they're not going to prosecute him.
Correct.
Right?
So let me throw this out, see what happens. Frank Milstead, I would move that we take no action and leave it to agency discretion.
Sergeant Aparicio, second.
I have a motion and a second. Any discussion? Having none, all those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? And the motion carries. Thank you very much, Mr. Harris. Mr. Lane, is there any future agenda items you'd like to bring up?
No, sir.
With that, I would adjourn today's meeting. Thank you all very much for being here.